Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
If your hair isn't performing like it used to, the answer isn't another hat. It's a proactive approach. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand. It's also NSF certified for sport and the official hair growth partner of Major League Baseball, the only hair growth supplement trusted by the pros. Visit Nutrafol.com, enter promo code PMT. Get $10 off your first month subscription, and you get free shipping. That's NUTRAFOL.com, promo code PMT.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 102 of season 2 of LCB. It's movie time. Jeff D'Lo, Ken Jack, Gooch. Chris not able to see Guardians 3, so Chris will be back next week. Just the three of us. Very Guardians-heavy episode, as expected. Will Poulter plays Adam Warlock. We interviewed him last week, so we have an interview with him. Really, really fun interview with Will Poulter. He was someone I hope we have back soon. And then, of course, reviewing the movie, the latest release in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it kind of kicks into gear now, 2023, in terms of movies. There's a lot of big ones about to all drop.
I haven't listened to the Will Poulter interview yet. Did you guys, are you the ones who brought up the word himbo to him?
No, someone before us got to it. Although I did like reference what a himbo is. I was like, yeah, you're essentially a big baby man. And he's just like, yeah, I guess.
Did you ask him my question?
No, I didn't. We didn't get to it. There wasn't that type of vibe. That's a vibe type of question.
I wanted to ask him what it was like to sit in Elizabeth Debicki's lap.
Probably the only woman near as tall as him on that movie.
Yeah, that
Bautista maybe even.
Not really a spoiler, but yeah, that made me laugh out loud when just sitting there like a little boy.
Little baby man.
So we'll review Guardians, but a couple of trailers. We had one drop this morning. We're recording this on Monday the 8th, and that is a new trailer for Oppenheimer. Probably the final trailer, unless they delay the movie again, which, or they just delay it in general, which I still think could happen. I think we're probably to a point where we're close to it not happening. Like they're probably at the cutoff, but it's still kind of crazy. They're going to that it's just going to release with Barbie 2 weeks after Mission Impossible. But
it might have moved up a few days, which I think makes a slight difference. It moved up like 3 or 4 days, I think.
Still a crazy ass cast. You see a lot of people in the trailer. Some we haven't seen. We haven't seen Florence Pugh yet. We see the first look at Albert Einstein, which kind of took me out of it for a second.
I think he was in the first trailer, but yeah, he was like, he's like, you see him and you're just like, that's that goofy ass dude with the tongue that go crazy. Yeah. We know him.
Yeah. Kind of. Cillian Murphy, Emily Blunt, Matt Damon, Robert Downey Jr. Good look at Robert Downey Jr. Florence Pugh, Rami Malek, Benny Safdie, Josh Hartnett, Kenneth Branagh, Dane DeHaan. Which, by the way, we'll talk about Kenneth Branagh's trailer. I don't know what I'm saying like that with a fucking like a twang. He's got his new. Did we talk? We didn't talk about the new Urkel Perot movie, did we?
No.
Did you see it before Guardians? A trailer?
God no.
Yeah, they played it for us. Alden Ehrenreich, Jack Quaid, Jason Clarke, Josh Peck, Alex Wolff, Tony Jash Goldwyn.
Peck. That sounds like a modern day influencer, Josh Peck.
Josh, you know that's the name of the comedy collective that Tim and Eric helped start with Michael Cera.
Or Wisconsin
Alex Wolff, yeah. James Darcy.
Darcy.
Who else? Gary Oldman, who I don't think we've seen Oldman, have we?
No.
Casey Affleck.
Wait, Oldman's in this movie?
Dude, Oldman, Casey Affleck, back to back. What a crew.
He plays Truman?
He plays arguably one of the biggest roles in the, well, maybe not.
that may not be the exact focus. Though you get a sense in the trailer that Congress and politicians will play a pretty solid part in this, in terms of the decision and all that. So maybe it's a big role. I don't know. But I could see it being kind of a side role.
It's going to be roasting Oppenheimer.
Gary Oldman is collecting every single World War II leader, Thanos Infinity Stones.
He's got Churchill, him. I think he's played other ones, too. Intelligence movies.
Everyone, for the most part, seems to have a side role except for Damon and Cillian Murphy. And maybe Emily Blunt, who plays Oppenheimer's wife, Kitty Oppenheimer. Mm. But it seems very Damon and Murphy heavy.
Yeah, which is good.
Cool. I'm very excited for this. Like, I do think it's going to be a very emotional, intense movie. It seems like, in terms of like the narrative arc, it'll be a lot of like doom, doom, doom. Yay, we did it. But then like doom. Like, I would imagine that's what happens.
And then Truman calling Oppenheimer like an unbelievable pussy and telling him to don't let that little whiny man baby in my office ever again, or whatever the quote was.
Oppenheimer, when his bomb designed to kill millions of people.
The actual meme was much funnier. I know you can't say it, but it was much funnier.
I can't believe this happened.
It's like, I can't say that. That's so bad. But yeah, no, that's going to be funny. I still like seeing, like you were mentioning, Einstein being like, it really ignites the atmosphere. And just like the full mustache hairpiece combo.
It's just funny. It's to tough. See. He's just not somebody.
Looks
they
like
didn't
him
get
too.
A, they didn't get like a crazy famous American actor, even British actor. They got a stage actor, Tom Conti.
Fucking Kevin James playing Oppenheimer.
Scottish actor. They didn't get anyone like crazy recognizable, which I don't think they could have done. I think that could have been like a real. He's just somebody that you're not used to see. Like, it's just funny. It's like you've seen Nixon, right? You've seen Truman. You've seen how many times have we seen Churchill? Like, you've seen all these different historical figures, but for something that's so weird about seeing Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
You never see him in anything.
I cannot tell you how many times I've seen him on like any screen representation.
Let's saw him. Let me look it up.
Was he in Albert? Bill and Ted's?
He was definitely in one of those time travel movies.
Yeah, I feel like he was in one of those. I can't remember though, but it was very shocking to see him. Like, they played that trailer with Guardians. I was like, what the fuck?
Let's see.
Transformers Dark of the Moon. Battle of the Smithsonian.
You're missing one of the best ones. He's Transformers Dark of the Moon, an Autobot character named Q Sports, is an Einstein-inspired head design with a new hairstyle and dapper mustache. Yeah.
That's right.
Holmes and Watson? What? I didn't remember that. Back to the Future.
That I might be making that up in my head, but that seems right.
Let's say Back to the Future doesn't seem right. That. It was just a dog. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. The Star Wars character Yoda's wrinkles are modeled after Einstein to give the impression of exceptional intelligence.
See, I could have fully believed that Albert Einstein gets like punched or something in Holmes and Watson.
Yes.
He rips a real nasty fart or something like that. That would really that just completely makes sense. I don't know why.
That honestly is way funnier than anything that was in Holmes and Watson.
You are spot on. That movie was so fucking stupid. The reason why I said punch is because the only thing I truly remember from that movie is when there's like a boxing match in that movie.
Yeah, they did try to rip off the Sherlock Holmes fight scene from like the first one with Robert Downey Jr. And it's just not nearly as funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what an unfunny movie Holmes and Watson was.
What do you all think the because I'm starting to get this vibe from Oppenheimer that it'll be one of Nolan's slower movies.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think the public reaction is going to be if it is like that? Like, do you think the public's going to eat it up, or you think it's going to be?
I don't know. I could see it being the same reaction that Dunkirk got.
Okay.
Because Dunkirk Dunkirk was like very intense, right? Like, because of it being a war movie, there was a lot of death. Like, Dunkirk was very intense, but it was a slower burn in terms of like the events happening. But there was like a constant building of dread and tension. I don't know if there will be on this. I think there will be, because like the underlying story, like what they're doing, they're building the fucking atom bomb. But like, I don't know.
There's like bits of action cut into. I don't know how you do that with Oppenheimer. You could talk about like the rival atomic programs in Germany and Japan that were working on. They were doing like hard water or whatever. But like, I don't know how you do that in an action heavy way other than like intelligence breaking stuff, which would be cool. That would be awesome.
It does look like we're going to get one of the classic, you know, in heist movies when they go around and they pick up the whole gang and it's like, fuck, yeah. I'm in. Mm-hmm. It looks like we're going to get one of those scenes where they're just recruiting the scientists at different colleges. And I can't wait for that. I'm just going to Boston College. Matt Damon, you know what? Fuck it. I'm in.
It's like the general, right? Or there was a cool line in that where he's like, why are you still a major? And he's like, they're going to make me a general for this or something like that. That was a good line.
It's a great episode of Rick and Morty when they do the heist, just like 10 heists in a row, and they just keep getting new crews.
I don't think Gooch knows he's the only Rick and Morty guy on the pod.
Am I the only one? Are you guys not Rick and Morty guys?
I never got around to it.
I've watched enough to say I've seen it, but I've not made it all the way
through. Not smart enough. You wouldn't get it.
I always wanted to because everyone I know loves it, but I just never got into it. Don't know why. Love cartoon comedies.
You know what has retroactively made me not find Rick and Morty as funny as I always have?
I can take a guess.
What do you think?
What, the fucking Shizuan sauce saga?
No, I've gotten past that. No, the MCU shows being so fucking unfunny and not like having none of that charm. And like they've just been, Marvel's just been hiring that writer's room for years now. And the only one that I think has really worked out is our good boy, Michael Waldron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very interested. This is going to be a funny review today. I'm very interested to talk about this movie at a wider length. I don't think there's much more on Oppenheimer. I'm very excited for it. I think they've done a great job, per usual, with Nolan stuff, is not showing a ton, but giving you a sense of like the movie a little bit. I mean, this is one of those things where it's not nearly as mainstream as Mission Impossible or fucking Barbie, but I think if you're a fan of Nolan, you're a fan of these big like Oscar contending blockbusters. Like this is, I mean, what more can you ask for here?
If you had to pick one right now, gun to your head. Are you going to Oppenheimer or are you going to Barbie first?
I'm going to Oppenheimer. I think it's, I'm not even.
Yeah, that's, I think just mood wise, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I do want to do the back to back.
Yeah. I think you do. I think, okay, and this is another thing I want to do. If they shift the dates around, if they're still releasing within a date, like a week of each other, I say we should make a point to still watch them back to back. Like wait until they're both released or both out and then watch them back to back anyway. As long as it's not an egregious amount of time between them.
Yeah, no, I'm down with that.
It'll leave a week open
for
us.
I'm excited. What a...
No.
We'll review Evil Dead. 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Evil Dead Rises, yeah. Still don't watch that. I'm behind on that.
I mean, I did see Evil Dead Rises. It's fine. Mm. It's not the original Evil Dead movies. It's just it's so far from that at this point, but it's still enjoyable.
There's our Evil Dead review. Now you guys
Gooch's can click. A huge Ash of the Evil Dead guy. Ash and the Evil Dead, that's his big...
I want to watch it. I do. I like Evil Dead a lot. Obviously, like Bruce Campbell a lot, too.
Brought to you by BetterHelp. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially because always growing and changing how you cope with maybe trauma, traumatic events, things that may be going on in your life. Everyone has a different way of doing it, but it's hard to figure that out if you're not talking to someone. And therapy is a great way to do that. Deepening your self-awareness, understanding of things that are going on. Sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do or how we should react or what's the best way to react to cope. Or just handle things. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. And that's the big thing. I don't like going to therapy. Doing it online, great. You can do chats. You can do phone calls. You can do video calls. You don't have to see anybody if you don't want to. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/life. BetterHelp, HELP.com/life. Get 10% off your first month. Big thing.
Next up is I didn't know this was a thing until I saw the trailer, and that's the new Gran Turismo movie. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that got announced a while. I remember when it first got announced, I was excited just because I read the first part of the headline, right? It's like, Neil Blomkamp, we're directing new movie. And I'm like, yeah. And then it's like, Gran Turismo adaptation. And I'm like, I'm going to jump off a bridge. Like, you're one of the best sci-fi minds in the entire world, and he's making a video game movie for racing cars.
Alternate headline, Neil Blomkamp has not made a movie in 10 years, needs a paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. geez, it's probably gonna be good too. That's the bad part, but it's like I'd rather a great sci-fi, even a middling sci-fi movie from him versus like the best Gran Turismo movie. I don't know.
It's based on a true story.
What is that?
A guy, Jan Martinborough. He's 31 now. He's from Britain. He's a professional racing driver competing in the Japanese Super GT series. And he was a Gran Turismo player that became a driver, like as an aspiring driver. That's the story.
But like every single person in the NBA now has played 2K. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is for all you F1 nerds out there. This is not good for your sport.
No, nah, like, hey, the film is about a Gran Turismo player whose gaming skills won a series of Nissan-sponsored video game competitions to become an actual professional race car driver. The person I went to go see the movie with someone, they turned me and said, I've never been less interested in a trailer. And I honestly was like, I think like in terms of the last year, in terms of like bigger movies, like I can't say it's number one because then you could just throw Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey at me and I'd be like, oh yeah, well, okay. But like in terms of like bigger releases and like big studio, big names in this, you got David Harbour, Orlando Bloom, Jaimin Hansu. Oh my God, I couldn't be less interested in this movie.
It's like a bummer again, because I do think this is going to be good. It's just like, I don't know. It's Gran Turismo. Like F1's hot, I guess, and that's why they're trying to like capitalize on this market while they still can. I do like I was just looking at the wiki, the headline of it, from gamer to racer. Usually gamers and races don't mix well. That's a combination you want to avoid at all costs. But man, this is a different type of deal. I don't know.
Basketball players love this movie.
I just don't.
Forgot about him.
I just don't know. I don't.
See, I'm just looking at the development too. Kaczynski was originally supposed to direct this. He'd be perfect for something like this.
Who?
You know what I mean? Joseph Kaczynski did Top Gun Maverick.
Okay.
Like something like that where he could bring speed to screen. He would have been great. I just want Neil to do sci-fi. Do legit sci-fi. Come on, man.
Such a corny element to it in the trailer. Where it's like David Harbour is.
Oh, you're a video game nerd?
Yeah, the guy who
has to teach you that on your chair with your cum sock.
He's got to pick the winner. Orlando Bloom is like backing him. He plays like the marketing executive, like a motorsport marketing executive.
dude, they're.
I mean, again, based on a real thing. So, like, whatever. But there's such a corny sports story. Like just believe him. Like, this guy he can't race video games? Like,
The training montage was laugh out loud funny because it was like, you know, like most training montages, they're doing like shit that you couldn't even like think of doing.
And running laps.
They have these guys like running outside on a row machine.
And it's got such a corny car cliche like trailer thing, which is funny because if you saw Guardians, you probably saw the Fast 10 trailer as well, where it's like whatever song is on will the beat or something in the song that will like line up with them shifting a gear in the car. Yeah. Classic cliche that was in this trailer. And then the part of the trailer that really got me that I was like, this stinks, is when he's like in the car and he's like, I've raced this track before.
Like he's on Rainbow Road.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like if Mario would have said that, like, oh. Yeah.
I think the only line that pissed me off like badly was David Harbour being like, You crash out in your game. You just press restart. You crash out here. You die. And it's just like, all right, dude. Like, we get the idea of your character. We understand.
Yeah. It's also not automatic death either.
Like, yeah.
this is made by Sony, right?
Yes.
PlayStation Studios, brother.
Do they have no other racing games they could have picked? Because Gran Turismo has not been popular since PlayStation 2.
Are they not like the racing franchise in video games? No. Like, what's above it?
There's better racing games, right?
I think they're the number one. They're the top dog.
Like, I mean, Mario Kart's the top dog.
Well, I guess like if sport video, you know what I mean?
Need for Speed.
That stuff has been defunct.
Yeah, that's been gone for longer. Let's look. Best racing games.
It's going to be like Gran Turismo, Forza. Yeah.
This will join the PlayStation Cinematic Universe, which includes Uncharted and Ratchet and Clank.
Ratchet and Clank. I love that first Ratchet and Clank game. I can't even try and act like I'm better.
Wait for
than
the Banjo Kazooie movie.
See this game. I've never played this, but Wreckfest. That would be a good movie.
You should be doing Twisted Metal. Honestly, I know they're doing that with like Anthony Mackie with a series or something, but whatever. The you know what they should make a game, or maybe not a movie, but like maybe an animated series or just another rebooted game. But like the Jack and Daxter games, I used to love those.
Yeah, those were sick.
Jack 1, Jack 2, Jack 3. The 3 one, you had all the racing elements of it. It was so much fun.
Yeah, just, I don't know. Who's this? I guess fans of Gran Turismo? I'm sure this will do like well internationally or something.
It's F1. You know what I mean? Like F1's going to be, it's super popular. So it's just going to play.
But these
it is F1, right? I'm not a racing guy.
No, it's not.
Well, I guess fast car F1 is just in my brain.
I wasn't going to try to be like a dick and like, well, actually it's not, but it's like, it's, I know, like you're saying the right thing here. It's like,
Jeff's just going to wait for us to be done recording. And he's gonna
it's
offline.
GT racing is different than F1, but you're not like, you're completely right though. Like,
I think the popularity of F1 is what is going to play towards this being, getting viewers.
Absolutely correct. It's playing off the popularity of like just racing in general and not like stock car racing like NASCAR.
I like how this is all European and they're just like, here's our pitmaster, David Harbour.
What is this? Just
the most American guy you could possibly get. It does not look like he knows what he's doing.
When is this set to come out?
August 11th.
What's it coming out against? Oh, it's going to come out just a month like after Fast X comes out this month. So it's got
Fast is
next
two
week.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
I texted Chris too. I was like, brother, you got 9 to watch in the next week. Have fun. Good luck with your brain.
Any of them?
Good luck with your, he has not seen any of them. Good luck with your brain not rotting after watching 9 of them in 10 days.
Jesus.
It's such a tease too if you've never seen the Fast movies.
Yeah.
To watch them start to finish, because you're going to hit that middle section and be like, yo, pretty good. And then all of a sudden it just goes away.
Yeah.
My hot take is Hobbs and Shaw is the best one.
I love Hobbs. I really, really like Hobbs and Shaw a lot.
Five is awesome. And man, I Fast 7 is I just think really well done. Like it's crazy that a clunky doofus franchise handled the death of like an actual person so well.
Mm-hmm. With like at least some level of finesse.
Like I teared up at the end of that movie. And I mean, he actually died, so that's a massive reason why. I'm not going to pretend that like that character, like Brian, was like a character that moved me emotionally. But like, they did a really good fucking job with that. Like, they really did. They truly did.
Yeah.
And then it just falls completely off.
I like though, like how Hobbs and Shaw and Fast to a lesser degree did this too, but Hobbs and Shaw really embraced the fucking craziness. Like they had like Captain America. Like super soldier fighting Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne Johnson's holding onto a helicopter with his bicep. Like that was also a ripoff of Captain America. Oh, I just put that together. Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, I mean, I love how they embrace that shit. And Idris Elba was also a great villain.
Yeah, no, Hobbs and Shaw was awesome though. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about 3Chi. We're now introducing the next evolution in ultra pure cannabis products, Delta 9O by 3Chi. 3Chi Delta 9O products deliver a similar yet smoother, stronger, and longer-lasting euphoria compared to traditional marijuana products. This high-quality and federally legal hemp-derived product raises the bar for what you should expect from a cannabis product in both effects and experience. We talk about 3Chi all the time. I am yet to try Delta 9O, but I'm very excited for it. We use the products constantly. It's all around the office. I'm sure you can picture it in your mind with everything we got going on there. I've used the gummies, the cookies, the brownies, and also the Rice Krispie Treat, which I talk about all the time, which, again, their edibles are incredible. They're so good. Get your exclusive 10% discount on 3Chi Premium THC products by going to 3Chi.com. That's the number 3CHI.com. And use promo code BARSTOOL10 to get 10% off your order today. Must be 21 or older to purchase. Please use responsibly.
The other trailer, you guys didn't see it, I guess. Did you see it, Gooch? The Haunting in Venice trailer?
I think I did. I think it played with Guardians.
Yeah, so the third movie in the Urkel Perot saga, after fucking Night on the Train or whatever it's called, Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile. Which Death on the Nile was plagued a little bit by the fact that Armie Hammer was in it.
That was rough.
There's a new one. Haunting in Venice, which is a straight up horror movie. Must solve the murder of a guest at a seance he attended. It's a pretty like jump scary trailer. It's very different. People in the movie. There's a surprising person in this movie. Ready? Names that you'd recognize. Actually, not a ton that you'd recognize. Michelle Yeoh's in it. Jamie Dornan. Tina Fey is in the movie.
That makes sense. Not really. Yeah. But.
Which I like. That's kind
of
cool. I mean,
speaking of Tina Fey, I saw one of your favorites this morning, Jeff. Saw Jenna Maroney at Starbucks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I opened the door for
Lane walking out. Ask a question about her actress for the trivia match for Ken Jack today, but didn't do it.
Oh.
What time?
30 Rock guy. That's the only thing I know her from, though. I couldn't tell you another thing.
Yeah, no, I just really cannot remember.
Vacation.
Very funny, though.
She's a young, I almost called her young lad. She's a young lad in the Vacation franchise. Anyway. It's a straight up horror trailer. It's interesting. Based on Halloween Party by Agatha Christie.
There's a great quarterback in the cast. I don't know if you saw that.
Kyle Allen.
Yeah. Kyle Allen's in the cast.
You think Agatha Christie's rolling over in the old grave when these movies come out?
They stink, yes. Dude. Why do they keep making them?
If she was still alive, she'd honestly say, fuck this franchise. And she would be a big Knives Out person. Knives Out Poker Face.
Yeah. I wonder, what was the ratings in the last one?
Couldn't have been good. I mean, Gal Gadot was in it.
Just fucking box office. Or not box office poison, but just like critical fucking poison.
I recall us...
62 for Death in the
liking, Nile. You gave it a 58. I gave it a 63. I recall us liking Murder a hair more.
I didn't see Death. I was so bored by Murder. I was like, no.
Murder Dude, was
Death in the Nile made $40 million.
Ugh, yuck. So why are they making another one? Made what was that? I gotta go.
That was right when the Johnny Depp.
No,
yeah.
It wasn't. It was 2022.
The first one made 100, like almost on the dot, and then the second one makes 45. It's like, oh yeah, fuck man, we gotta make another one of these.
That's
these are MGM too, right?
These went so far away.
Yeah, that's domestic, right?
We got him.
That's domestic though, because I think I'm looking at Murder says it made 350 worldwide, but regardless,
okay. And then all of that worldwide gross is from like England. No one else in any other country is watching that shit. It's fucking red faced fools.
Yeah, Death on the Nile. I mean, it definitely did not have the hype of the first. I mean, the first they're making them like they're a fucking success. That's crazy.
Yeah, just keep pumping them out. I don't get it.
Yeah, 137 million after making 350 worldwide the first one. Well, like, only made $40 million off its budget.
It's fucking, Kenneth Branagh, as much as I liked Belfast, I'd be cool if he never directed a movie again. Fine, yeah, I like him as an actor. I'd be fine if he never directed a movie for the rest, like the rest of time.
Oh. I heard one of our coworkers makes a cameo in this one.
Oh God! Who?
Old Riggsy comes out during the séance.
Oh yeah.
It does. Yeah, one of our true. Barstool Sports Play. Riggs is in the new Agatha Christie movie.
Man, going through his filmography as a director, it's like Thor, not really good. Like Thor, Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit.
Thor the bad one, then Thor the worst one.
Yes, exactly. The Cinderella, which is good. I like Cinderella.
Cinderella was an okay adaptation.
The Lily James one.
I like that one. All is true. That do you remember that he did that Shakespeare movie where he's like all dressed up in the prosthetics? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Artemis Fowl.
Fowl. That's right. That's bad. that was bad. What a stinky turd that was. Oh my God.
Damn, that's such a. It was Murder, Artemis Fowl, Belfast, then Death on the Nile. Now it's just like the diamond in a literal giant chunk of shit for his filmography.
Oh, I must continue making movies.
Yeah. Just keep acting, man. You're a great actor.
I think that's it. That's it on news. We have. Is there anything else? Oh, so let's just get into Succession.
The writers.
Oh yeah, writer strike. I mean,
what is there to say about it? I mean,
we're pro writers, I think, across the board, and
yeah,
they got a lot of cool stuff. What's happening? The SAG-AFTRA contract is up in June, and I think that that is also going to impact this somehow. I don't know how. I can't pretend to be like some expert in the talks on this at all, but I'm very pro writer and hope they get all the money they deserve, because I didn't realize that they weren't making like anything off of streaming residuals.
Yeah,
which is crazy. Because like I remember one, I saw one writer tweeting about it. Like he wrote on a show that had no life really as a sitcom on network television, but then when it was gotten streaming, it took off, and he gets nothing from that, which is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is I hope it gets resolved soon, because it's like, yeah, I want the writers to get paid, but every day they're off, you know, there's so many
bad
auxiliary industries that are supported by filming and stuff like that, like from craft services to everybody else is affected by it.
Well, the grips, all the electricians.
Yeah, it's not just the studio heads that are hurting. It's going to be like normal people. And like the idea, I see a lot of people be like, oh, well, writers haven't done anything original in years. The writers aren't the one
choice.
The writers are not the ones that want to do these remakes and sequels and all this like reboots and stuff like that. Like writers want to write their own shit.
Like every also, writer
we live in an era where we live in an era where like going nuts, going real dummy over how good writing is on TV and like that's like whatever. Like say I guess maybe even if you want to blame incorrectly writers for like movies and sequels, we live in an era where there's so much good fucking TV.
You just don't search for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like there's like,
it sucks that you do need to search for it.
We're talking about a show in Succession that is like considered writing like a masterclass. It's yeah, it's silly.
Yeah.
Silly. But yeah, speaking of Succession, the sixth episode? Seventh episode.
Yeah.
Because then there's three left. It's Election Eve episode. Spoiler alert if you've not seen the new episode of Succession. Another just awesome episode. And there's a really, really like sad scene at the end. Like a real kind of gut punch if you're not that. I mean, who is at this point still like shipping Tom and Shiv? Like they're you still liked it? You still
Dude, I love a toxic relationship. I love it. I was there for five seasons of Chuck and Blair, baby.
It's just it's a really good, it's a great example yet again. And we'll talk about with Guardians. We'll talk about I don't know, maybe some of it's earned, some of it's not. Like in terms of like saying goodbye to characters that you do love, even though you hate these characters, like you're supposed to hate them in like a loving way. It was sad. You're like, oh fuck, like that truly is you've always felt that they could get back together. They've always had really bad shit, ever starting with when she asked for like an open marriage on their wedding day, then like the talk on the beach at the end of season two, season three, the betrayal, all that. And you know, it's always been kind of a give and take, or even, you know, Shiv would have jealousy and anger over Tom maybe flirting with somebody despite the fact that she proposed, everything controlling, but then, you know, he betrayed her as much as possible at the end of last season. You're like, damn, like they're fucking done, like they're donezo. She legitimately said, I don't care about you. I don't like anything. And then the end scene was when he's walking through the party going like, all right, time to go. Mm-hmm. Good night, Tom. Fuck Tom. Like it was a really great fucking scene. It was an awesome way to end that episode. It was a gut punch.
Yeah, it was. You can't say you'll be a bad mother. It's like, you can't say that. You just can't. Like that was the dagger to the heart. That was it.
It's also true, and she should be like, just on everything we know about her as a character, I wouldn't want her to be my mom.
Motherhood changes a woman. You never know.
Well, they're also filthy rich, and they'd be the people that would just let you be raised by a nanny or whatever.
I mean, she's got to be a better mom than Kendall's a dad.
Rava?
Yeah.
Oh, my Kendall's God.
A dad, or then their own mom was a mom.
Right when you're about
she'll
to
be a good mom because her mom was admittedly terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kendall's right a deadbeat dad, though.
Yeah. Dude, right when you're about to forget that Kendall actually has a family.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've never believed anyone less in movie or TV than saying that they're doing their work for their kids than Kendall saying, like, I'm doing it for them. No, you're not.
Liar. Not just doing it for them. Doing it for them to make the world safer.
Yeah. That's when's the last time that we had seen Kendall's kids?
Like the end of last two? Season. When he end almost of last died. Season? When he almost died, okay, yeah.
Right.
Logan is talking to, do you know what his son's name is? Always a fun one.
God, no.
I don't know. The one that he said.
Iverson. Iverson.
That's right. Oh,
yeah. I knew you would know when you heard it because it is. You're like, every time you hear, like, what the fuck? Logan is sitting on a bench with Iverson in Italy after Kendall had like been found drowning, I guess.
Yeah.
And like he fell into the pool or whatever. So that was the last time we'd seen them. I didn't realize his daughter was old enough to be in fucking high school or middle school having thoughts about anti-cable news, though. That's kind of surprising. Fun episode of like political back dealings. I guess I didn't realize, or I kind of forgotten, that one of the Pierce relatives was working with Connor on his campaign. The one who looks like actually Albert Einstein.
Yeah. By the party. Yeah. Joe Ballins had one thought on Succession he'd sent me this morning. He sent me a screenshot from the Succession Reddit, and it was the Tom and Shiv scene, and the person's like, I'm speechless, best scene of the episode, hands down. They're coming for those Emmys. And Shiv said, it's so funny when people say that they're coming for an Emmy. It's like saying, man, LeBron is coming for that ESPY. It's like, yeah, that's the idea. That's the idea of the show.
I do think in terms of Emmys, it's still probably Kieran
Culkin. Ted Lasso.
Oh, God.
Actually, I still haven't watched. I haven't heard fucking word about this other than from you saying worth it.
Guys, it is.
It's bad. Is dire. No, I've watched it. My mom actually, my sister are starting. My mom and sister just binged Gilmore Girls for like 3 fucking years. And they finally finished it, which is odd because my sister's seen it. Anyway, they're talking about like watching a new show, and she's like, I don't really want like a bump. She was going to watch Succession because my dad loves Succession. She's like, I watch. And she's like, I want not a bummer of a show. I'm like, well, don't watch Succession then. It's not it. She's like, well, what about Ted Lasso? And I was like, yeah, but I was like, it's good. The first 2 seasons are fun. I was like, I got to tell you what. I've just started watching the 3rd one, and I don't like it. Makes me not want. It's like makes me not want somebody to watch Ted Lasso right now.
It's awful.
It's terrible. Yeah,
it's some of the worst. It's one of the biggest drop-offs in writing I've ever seen. I don't know what happened, who left that writer's room. I guess Bill Lawrence stepped away to a degree to focus on shrinking, which is fantastic, but holy shit, it'll just stop, and then they'll do like a PSA on whatever social issue they're trying to touch on.
The nice thing about the first season was that there was no expectation. It was based on a fucking commercial for NBC Sports for the Premier League. Like, there was just no – they were just making a show that they thought was nice, charming, funny, whatever. And then the opinions rolled in, and everyone's like, oh, I love this. This is so inspirational. This is like this quote, this. Ted Lasso should fucking speak to the U.S. U.S. men's national team before the World Cup. It's almost like they heard the feedback. And they're like, hey, we do that well. Let's fucking crank it up to 11.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, that's what it feels like, especially this season. Maybe not as much too, but this season really feels like that. Like, they've taken – it's not even bad feedback. People love the show, and they rightfully so. It's a nice show. It's a very fun show. But it's like they took the good feedback. They're like, let's just do more of that, and it just doesn't work that way. It doesn't stay true to itself.
The only clip I had seen was the one where they were talking about like nudes on the phones or whatever.
Yeah, that was last week's episode.
Yeah, and I saw that scene being posted on Twitter, and I saw part of it, and I was like, this is like truly heinously bad. And I just looked up to find it again, and it's like half the people are people being like, this is preachy and fucking weird and bizarre and PSA, like you were saying. And this person, from a Ted Lasso ship account, yes, this scene is preachy, but Ted Lasso's demographic is men between 16 and 30, so it needed to be preachy.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? No one watches TV to be preached at. Like, no one wants that.
Dude, it's the way they drop these. It's like the story will just be happening. It'll just stop for this.
That's what it seems like, man.
It happened in the week before, too. They did Shut Up and Dribble, and they didn't even, like, change anything from, like, the LeBron, like, Laura Ingram stuff. Like, it was just a dead-on recreation. And it was so bad. Sam is, like, screaming, like, the black player from Africa, he's like screaming in the locker room about like everything going on in his life. And then all of a sudden he turns around and his dad is just standing there. His dad had just come from Africa, just standing there. It is so bad.
It's
Jason Sudeikis is liking tweets that say like the writing is bad.
the thing is that it always felt genuine, right? And it just doesn't feel that way anymore. Like it always felt very subtle and genuine, and maybe subtle's not the right. Sometimes it's pretty, like the Christmas episode was a great episode, and that's like in your face. But again, it felt earned and genuine, where this just feels like they're creating storylines for the sake of trying to make that moment and to be sweet and to be inspiring, where that's just not why the first two seasons were good, because it felt fucking relatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels like a crowdsourced script from Twitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, but back to Succession. Back to the good show. Sorry to...
But yeah, I mean, there's... I don't know. I don't have much more to say on, like, the show. I mean, I think it's... Again, it's like... the Succession's... It's so good at this point. We're like, it's like, what do you even fucking say? It's just awesome.
Well, let me ask. Do you think this Mattson stuff is just gonna... Do you think Mattson is done for?
Yeah, I think Mattson's been a ticking time bomb for a few episodes, where it is gonna implode at some point. He has too many like red, which is funny because they use red flag in like the teaser next episode, like Roman does. But like, there's too many red flag weird things with that character for him to just like. Nobody in this show has a bad thing that just goes by the wayside. Like if the alarms are going off in the show with a character, it usually explodes at some point. And like his comms director, like there's something brewing with him that's going to be real bad. And now obviously at the end, Kendall wants to kind of reverse course and not even like avoid the sale, but flip it on its head.
Reverse Viking, baby.
Yeah.
Reverse Viking.
We're going to pillage them. Dude, when Shiv is pressing him for like, what do you mean funky numbers? And he's like, well, India, imagine if there were two Indias, then it might make more sense.
Dude, I love him. He's fucking, what a great guest spot he's been for the season.
No, he is fantastic.
He has like a swagger about him. That's like even the way he jumped off the couch to hug Kendall when he was making that speech. Like he's playing the character in like a perfect piece of shit, like founder CEO way. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could tell he played, that was so like when someone's beat and they have nothing else to say. And he's like, your numbers are gay.
Yeah. 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 Yours were gay. Yeah.
Dude, he's best.
Kind of
next episode is the election episode too,
mm-hmm.
which looks fucking incredible. The poll numbers coming in, the results, a type of episode we have not had with Succession yet, which is pretty cool. All the political episodes have typically been pretty great. There's very, mm-hmm. it's like two or three, but like the hearings episode was amazing.
I do appreciate that they dive into politics a bit, but they do stay away from it considerably. Mm. They could do a lot more, and they know that.
Well, there's no one. There's a nice balance too, because Shiv is so left wing. Roman's clearly more right wing. Kendall's very moderate in the middle. Kendall doesn't really care. Kendall just really cares about success and like what best benefits money. Him. So like that's, it's nice that they're able to balance that way, where you kind of get the hilarity on both sides. I hope we get a little Gil Evis next episode.
Hell yeah, you remember the name.
Yeah, he's a great fucking character, and he's the vice presidential candidate to the Jimenez, who is the Democratic candidate. We've not met; we've only met Jared Mankin.
All right, I was trying to remember that. I was like, kept seeing him on TV, and they showed him on the Look Ahead, and I was like,
we haven't really met him. I don't even know if we will. I don't know if we will meet that candidate. I would imagine that if we dive into that side. The Democratic ticket, I would imagine we get Evis, because we've just met Evis so many times, and because Nate was in this last episode.
Yeah.
That final conversation, I really like that between Nate and Kendall, and he's like, dude, we're not Logan and Gil. It's a good thing. And like, you could kind of see the wheels in Kendall's head spinning. He was like, maybe I should stop trying to chase this.
Yeah. It's going to be, I'm excited. It's going to be good. And clearly Tom is ready to go. Tom is ready to fuck some shit up. Tom's not very happy.
Yeah, and also Jerry's ready to fuck shit up too.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah. I was really hoping they'd reconcile this episode.
No, they're donezo too.
Sad.
It's over.
That's sad. There's
he's
a shit.
He's not going to jerk off on the other side of her walls anymore.
She liked it.
Also, every time Tom is, and they're all funny, but within like the show itself, any joke Tom makes to Greg is hilarious. But anytime Tom makes a joke to anybody else, it's so cringeworthy. It's so uncomfortable. which is I love that with that character, like with Greg, with a lesser, with somebody below him, he's hilarious. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, he's, but then anyone that has a mild bit of power over him, he cowers into just a cringeworthy loser.
Greg is firing 100 people and Tom is behind him, like just acting like he's sucking a bunch of dicks.
Yeah.
So, fake crying. So funny.
All right, let's talk about nuts.com. Nuts.com is your one-stop shop for freshly roasted nuts, dried fruits, sweets, pantry staples like specialty flours, and more. Their wide selection means that there's something for everyone. Nuts.com offers plenty of gluten-free options, organic choices, and other diet-friendly products. Whether you're looking for something sweet, savory, or need to stock up on everyday cooking essentials, you're bound to find something to try. Shop a la carte anytime or opt into a hassle-free auto delivery so that you never run out of your favorite items. If you already stocked up at home, they also sell directly to businesses. Snackless satisfaction knowing the quality is a top priority at nuts.com. They roast their nuts and pop their corn the same day it ships so that it reaches you deliciously fresh. Since 1929, they've been doing it the old-fashioned way. One taste, and you'll know the difference. Right now, nuts.com is offering customers a free gift with purchase and free shipping on orders of $29 or more at nuts.com/lights. So go check out the delicious options at nuts.com/lights. You receive a free gift and free shipping when you spend $29 or more. That's nuts.com/lights.
All right, interview time. Will Poulter. In plenty of things, but specifically this movie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. He debuts as one of the biggest characters in the Marvel comics, yet to debut in the cinematic universe. He's the wielder of the gauntlet in Infinity War in the Infinity Gauntlet saga in the comics. But obviously that will not be happening. No, it's no spoiler there. He will not be killing Thanos. Maybe he kills him in Secret Wars or whatever. Maybe Thanos comes back. It's very possible. But he plays that character. We got to talking about that and much more. He was great. All right. We are joined for the second time ever in person, kind of. I'm out on the other side of the country. But Will Poulter, we have a bone to pick with you off the top, but we're disappointed. We're just 2 years later, we're disappointed.
Oh no.
And it's very much related to this movie.
It is
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Ken Jack and I saw it mere hours ago. Saw it yesterday.
Oh,
opening
yeah.
night. I don't even know if we mentioned Marvel to you last time. Probably not. It wouldn't have made sense, which I'll explain in a second. But our desk is littered with Infinity Gauntlets. We have Marvel Funko Pops. So they were like, are you going to be able to see Guardians by the Will Poulter interview? We're like, yeah, we're going to be able to see the movie.
Oh, yeah. Legends. Thank you for watching it.
But we interviewed you 2 years ago, and we have this thing that happens with this podcast where within anywhere between 10 minutes and 24 hours after an interview, some large news breaks with the
about
person.
The actor. Yeah.
We interviewed you about, it was about Dope Sick. It was September 2021.
Okay.
And the next fucking day, you got announced as Adam Warlock.
The very next day.
It was gut-wrenching. You couldn't have like given us a hint.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I apologize.
I have a tickle in my Adam's apple. You know, throw something.
Yeah. That's tough. Yeah, I had to keep that secret for a while. Mm-hmm. It was probably burning inside of me at that time.
So you may not know the exact date. Maybe you do. That way, we interviewed September like 20th-ish, 2021. Wow. How long in advance did you have to keep that a secret and keep that under wraps?
That's really interesting. I probably, I'd been auditioning since June of that year.
Mm-hmm.
So it had been June, July, August, September. Very dyslexic, so I have to count the months like that. I'd been like 3-4 months of auditioning anyway. So obviously kept a secret all through that process, but also didn't really legitimately think I was going to get the role either. I think I probably found out very, very early September then that I'd actually got it. So it sounds like I was waiting about 3 weeks. If the interview was on the 20th, it sounds like maybe 3 weeks of secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one too, because it's not like, not to compare, I guess we are comparing, you're not like playing background character 5, like you're playing a character that has been
I'm sure you know, teased, fan cast and rumored for so long that like that's a hefty one to not screw up and accidentally reveal.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And with that comes like a certain amount of pressure, but also like a genuine sense of responsibility, you know. And I'm really, really grateful that his introduction comes at the end of like this kind of Guardians trilogy, at least as we know it. And it's a real honor to get to play a character who has a weight of expectation around him, you know, and has fans who have, you know, preconceptions about what he's going to be and how he's going to evolve. And I'm really grateful for all of that.
You were the start of a bad stretch. I think right after you, we had about three straight actors that we interviewed the next day. They were cast in Oppenheimer. I think like it was something like that. Like, three straight Oppenheimer actors that we interviewed. And it was like Jason Clarke. Oh, fuck, I forget the other two, but it was a bad stretch.
Wow. Well,
do you mind pulling your microphone just a hair closer, by the way?
Of course. Yeah. Like that?
There you go. Perfect.
There you go. Absolutely. Continue. So we'd love to ask you a question that we asked. We interviewed Maria Bakalova a couple days ago.
She's so funny. So talented.
So funny. Great. By the way, as Cosmo. Cosmo is one of the best additions to the show along with yourself. I guess franchise. But jumping into this world of Marvel with like an established cast that's already kind of like this tight knit family, is that like kind of like a daunting thing to get into that world?
Yeah, it's a good question. It was a kind of blend of things. I think, on the one hand, you know, I was a little bit apprehensive, nervous about coming into not just a huge film, you know, and like a movie made on this kind of scale. But I think also joining a cast that were so tight knit and have been together for 10 years, you know, you're the new kid and you just don't want to like get in the way or overstep the mark or kind of ruin any kind of chemistry or upset the balance of anything. I'm telling you, like the legacy cast, as they're referred to, they're full of, I mean, the nicest people, and that's by design. Like James, I think, you know, kind of appointed them in those positions because he really cares about that. Mm-hmm. You know, he cares about having a kind of a fun, inclusive, kind environment for people to work in. And they couldn't have made me feel more welcome. And like, that's really, really, appreciated.
You've done such a crazy mixture of types of sets and types of movies in scale. From, you know, we talked to you about Dope Sick last time. We talked to you about Dope Sick. We talked about Midsommar, which we got to talk about Ari Aster in a little bit again, by the way. 100. Which is a new movie that just came out. But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But then you've done like Maze Runner, you've done Narnia, you've done this. Does it ever get like after doing this now, like do you ever kind of lean one way or the other? Like I prefer to do that, or do you like kind of the mix of going back and forth from such drastically different types of projects?
It's interesting, man. I think for me, you know, having the opportunity to do a variation of things kind of keeps it interesting, keeps the challenge alive. You know, I like feeling kind of stretched, and it's all learning opportunities, you know, mm-hmm. like whatever genre, whatever medium, whatever size, like I feel like I'm always learning something new through those experiences and working with different filmmakers and, you know, what I learned from working with Catherine Bigelow, you know, in comparison to what I, you know, learned working with Barry Jenkins or someone like Ari, like, you know, these are people that I really admire. And I'm in a position where I can really kind of have my notebook out and, you know, really kind of take stock of what they do well and carry it forward. And, each time you work on something, I think you walk away with just that little bit more knowledge that you can apply the next time. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but every day is a school day, you know, when you're working on a film set. Mm. And I think the moment it feels like, you know, there's nothing left to learn or, you know, then yeah, maybe I'd hang it up, but like definitely not thinking about it now.
It is a crazy mix. Like you get those smaller projects, you get those different things, and you get this and you're walking around, like there's people crawling around like animals next to you with mocap suits on.
It's like, yeah, exactly. Tennis balls, shit right. Like that. Yeah.
Right. This had a whole host of like new challenges to it, you know, mm-hmm. and like CGI interaction on the scale that I hadn't really kind of known before. Kind of only really dipped my toe in that regard. So it was very cool.
Oh, Jillian told me a cool story right before you came in. Jillian's our PR person. She's like, you got here, you were downstairs. Sorry, the banging, that's next door. They're doing something crazy.
Oh, no.
She told me that you arrived here. Somehow people knew you were here. Right. And you got mobbed outside, and Jillian is like trying to like save you and be like, here, he has to go. She said, you stayed there. And he's like, no, I want to sign everyone's autograph. And I love that because it's not like a crazy often thing that you get a star that's like just that into making sure everyone gets like their time or space, but like they're there. You know what I mean?
That's nice of you, man. There's, I mean, I appreciate you saying that, but I yeah, it's funny. I mean, I'm really grateful for the you know, the people who support these films and the Marvel fans kind of making them what they are. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some people out there maybe selling them on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And they have no idea who I am.
You're like, who can I sign this out to? And you're like, they're like, eBay?
Yeah.
That's my name?
Yeah, just my bank account. Just put it, sign it to my bank account. No, you know, like, honestly, one of the coolest things about this experience has been like seeing little kids in cosplay, yeah. You know, and like I met a kid in a mini Adam Warlock costume the other day at a premiere. Like that kind of stuff means the world.
You know, what's cool about Warlock is, and this is something I don't know what I expected about the character going into the movie, but he's essentially a giant baby man, a big baby man.
There's an element of that. Yeah, for sure.
Did you have any inspirations for the characters, so to speak? Because I was trying to think of like in my head, like who would I even compare it to? There's like a lot of like thick British characters I would. Like bully characters, if that makes sense, right. Where it's like they had like kind of that air of like, where's mommy? Like,
right.
But I couldn't nail it down.
You know, I think something that James and I were exploring with this introduction of the character is the fact that this is Adam in his infancy. And mm-hmm. So he is kind of mentally kind of childlike, at least at the beginning of the movie. And physically there's kind of a paradox there or a bit of a dichotomy. And then in a kind of relatively short arc, what we tried to do is kind of show signs of his maturity and then him maturing and evolving and developing a moral compass, you know, deciding which side of the line he wants to be on as far as good and evil is concerned, right and wrong. And by the end of the movie, you kind of get a better sense of like who Adam will be going forward. I hope. And,
oh, yeah.
And I'd love the opportunity to kind of evolve him more. And, you know, inspiration wise, it was just quite a human, you know, experience. It was a sort of human and relatable kind of self-development journey, you know, mm-hmm. of just being a young person trying to orientate yourself and navigate the world you find yourself in.
You mentioned kind of exciting to see where he's going to go. No spoilers here, but I don't think it takes a genius to know that this is not a one-off character in the MCU. It's a massive character who is kind of shifted around for what you normally would see in the comic, especially like the Infinity Gauntlet and the Infinity Saga. Do you know, and I know you can't say much, but like, do you have an idea of what you're doing next with this character? Is it kind of wait and see? Because it's an odd thing where James Gunn, the Guardians, like this thing's wrapped, but now you're kind of just thrown out into that open world of Marvel.
Yeah, I have to be honest, man. I really, really mean this. I have absolutely zero idea.
Tomorrow the news is going to break into that. Adam Warlock.
And I say that because I'm hoping that tomorrow they will announce. Yeah.
I believe you, but this may be it though. If it does happen, I will still believe you have our word.
Yes, listen, if that happens, I'm writing you both and thanking you sincerely. No, I really, really don't know. You know, I genuinely feel so lucky to have had this be my introduction, you know, just to have it kind of under James's guidance, you know, to have like Kevin be so kind of supportive and all the Guardians also just kind of like welcome me in. That's been really, really lovely. But what is on the horizon? I do not know.
This is something a lot of people have made a big deal about, I guess your beef up, right, so to speak. How brutal is the MCU diet workout plan? Cause we've asked this to other Marvel actors too. Cause like, we just imagine there's a handler everywhere you go that just has a taser and like you look at a donut the wrong way.
Yeah. That's so funny. I would have got tased a lot. I probably would have attempted that a lot if there'd been cookies around. But no, you know, I was really lucky. I got to work with a team of really, really talented people who helped me out enormously, and helped me do it in a way that was safe and natural and protected my mental and physical health kind of long term, which is important when you're kind of, you know, sort of testing your body in that respect. Mm-hmm. And I just gave it my best shot. You know, I was fortunate that I'd been working out for a number of years, and kind of, you know, a couple of roles previously, I tried to kind of put on a bit of size and develop a bit of muscle for that. So I wasn't kind of starting from scratch, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then when the Marvel job came my way and I started kind of auditioning, I was kind of in the ballpark, you know, physically, and I just kind of ramped up the intensity of things. A guy called Ben Carraway designed my whole program. He was like my head trainer. Daryl Richards is one of my other trainers. And then Aaron Deer was my nutritionist. And it was really, really, you know, helpful to have all that support. And Chris's chef, Chris was kind enough to kind of make Chris's amazing chef available to me during the shooting.
And pretty
shout
nice.
Out yeah. Chef Patricia. She's incredible. And, you know, she made a massive difference.
I've seen his Instagram videos of his meals and they look great. Jeff brought up a great idea too. It would be funny if Adam Warlock, like one of his defining traits in future movies is that he's just a big foodie. You work it into the plot somehow.
You don't worry about it.
Yeah. He's like a really pretentious foodie.
I'm so down. Adam sending his compliments to the chef.
Yeah, I 100%
am down for that.
Also, it's like when we talked to you, it's not like you were like a slug slithering into the interview. Like you were still, like you definitely, like you beefed up. It's not like, you know, you were like all dumpy in the last
time. That's the worst thing about the internet. They'll be like, wow, this guy isn't like a dressed down dork like he was in We Are the Millers. What, like they don't seem to differ that from reality, like what you actually would normally look like.
I think something that gets lost on the internet is context. And it was interesting seeing people take a photo of me when I was 19 years old and a photo of me when I'm 29. And they're like, how did this happen?
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Before and after. Overnight. What a glow up.
Yeah.
He got older? What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. That's an interesting one.
Speaking of physical things, though, you definitely are a makeup character. To what extent, though? How long are you in the chair? We asked Maria Bakalova to ask a question to you.
To you. So this is from her.
And that was it. She's like, how long was he in the chair?
Who asked me this?
Maria Bakalova.
Maria did? Yeah. Oh, that was funny. First of all, incredible makeup team. Lexi and Lou were the folks looking after me and their whole crew, Scotty and everyone else, just amazing. I think they broke the record on this movie for most visual effects makeup applications in a movie ever.
Oh, wow.
A title formerly held by the Grinch, I believe.
Wow. And the Hoover was huge. That's fair. I can see that.
Yeah. So
Jim Carrey punching air somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Ron Howard, yeah.
Yeah, and I could say I was not in the chair as long as Jim was, from what I hear. But so yeah, my makeup and hair combined. Hair was done by Cassie and Steph, who were incredible. Makeup and hair combined, it was like under 2 hours, maybe 2 hours.
Dave Bautista just so pissed. He had the full body paint.
I know. And I mean, Dave had a much kind of longer makeup job. And I know that like Karen too. And, I mean, the Gamora makeup too, like Zoe's is pretty intense.
So. Karen had a very funny tweet where she was like, I forgot. Did you see this? She's like, forgot on a day of shooting that she had couples therapy. So she's in the middle of a couples therapy Zoom with like her and her partner and just the therapist. And she's in full Nebula makeup. It's so funny. It's only down to the neck. And it's so funny.
That's so funny.
It's funny that Pratt can just gets the roll at the set. It's a little tucked up here and there.
Just like, walks in. There.
Yeah, and just looks wonderfully handsome.
We'll give you a little hair curl here. You're good.
Yeah, and you're good to go. You're ready to save the world. Yeah.
What's a Marvel hero or villain that you want to go toe to toe with as Adam? If there's one, it's completely hypothetical. You can pick anybody you want.
I got to tell you, I think one of the best villain performances ever is from Chukwudi Awuji in this movie.
He was so good. Unreal.
He's unbelievably good as the High Evolutionary. And I kind of like the idea that like Adam and the High Evolutionary like have some kind of unfinished business, you know? And like that would be maybe fun to like go toe to toe with him as someone who is kind of like, you know, in part my creator. So that would be cool.
That was great. We were so excited when he got cast in it too, because we loved him in Peacemaker. Yeah. Like he's perfect in this. Like, why would he not have killed that? Man, he was good.
He's an extraordinary actor.
Maybe the most hateable villain I can remember from like the last decade. Like, oh
yeah, he's right off the top of the movie. He's just detestable. Just the way. Yeah, it's great.
And in real life, he's lovely.
That's what we've heard too.
So like, you know, you know that performance is good.
Yeah. What is there a hero you want to team up with?
Hero wise. I've always loved the Hulk. I've always loved that character. And I think such a kind of like complex hero too. So that would be fun. And if I am correct, I think
dressed like him right now,
crossover. Exactly. I'm trying to audition right now. There is some crossover between Adam and the Hulk. So that would be very cool.
That'd be awesome.
The James Gunn experience. Oh. What was that like, especially with Marvel? He gets it as much as anybody. It's such a passion for him. And did you maybe throw in a couple hints? I mean, look, you can be in both worlds. You're like, hey, DC, Nowhere to find me.
James is amazing. I really don't have enough good things to say about working with James. The experience was so great. He's so encouraging and supportive and kind, and that means as much as anything else. You know, the fact that he's this wonderful visionary and such a talented creative too is, you know, super impressive. But the fact he's also such a like nice guy with it and cares so deeply about the environment that he creates, and you know, shouldering crazy responsibilities shooting these movies, and now, you know, heading up a studio, and he doesn't forget the importance of that environment and you know, the people that he's in charge of ultimately having a good time and feeling supported. And that's why I really got a lot of love for James.
Yeah, I think you see that too with like all the main, like you're saying, like the legacy cast members that stood up for him after he got dismissed at first and then came back. Like right. They love him, and right. Like people and everyone that we've interviewed that's worked with him too, they all love him like crazy.
He's a really good dude.
He has an accident to let it slip who's playing Superman. You have like not on like the carpet or anything. He hasn't.
He's a master of like teasing things and then, you know, retaining information, and then, you know, he could probably undo your like curse that you guys have on the show. Like, he's probably got some kind of wand that he can wave and undo that.
Which is weird because we used to be the reverse curse, because we got J.K. Simmons cast, essentially. We did that. That was just us. We got him cast in the second Spider-Man movie. We had him read. Wow. I wrote him a whole script as J. Jonah Jameson like a 2 years before the movie came out. And he read it off. Everyone like went super viral, like all this stuff. And then he got in it. So maybe we'll have you read some lines of Superman.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. That's so wild. And he's so great, J.K. Simmons.
I know, he's awesome. We were just talking about Whiplash the other day. You got to ask the GQ question.
Yeah, we talked about your – it's what's one of the better like GQ interviews. We actually didn't get to ask this question last time, and I'm 2 years later, I got to ask it. It's about, are you still a wired headphones guy?
I wearing them now. I guess
I was looking at our old notes from our last interview.
I brought these in.
Yeah, they're not from the studio.
We talked about a bunch of stuff from like just your various interviews and stuff online. And it was one thing I didn't get to ask. I was like, and now even 2 years later, so it's even more pressing. Are you still a wired guy?
That's so funny. You know what? I saw someone with wired headphones the other day, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I thought it was just amazing to see it out in the wild, you know?
You're one of us.
I've gone wireless. Gone wireless. They're so commonplace now that like, I was one of the last bastions of the wireless, the wired headphones, but I have transitioned. I'm now in the future.
Eventually they'll become like cool and retro, and everyone's going to want to have wired headphones again.
Oh yeah.
It's going to happen.
Be like a Walkman or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or like records.
We have a coworker, KB. He got bullied out of using wired headphones like a year or two ago.
For years.
He now loses one pair of AirPods every few weeks.
Yeah,
this is the problem.
See, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is the problem. I feel for him. I know what he's going through.
So we need to talk. Ari, did you see Bo is Afraid?
So I'm trying to see Bo is Afraid today.
Today?
No, I'm trying to see it today. And my friend Archie Madekwe is in it. I hope that's not a spoiler. I'm very excited. Joaquin's one of my favorite actors. Ari is one of my favorite filmmakers, so I'm excited, and I want to go and support my friend Archie.
Oh, dude, it is unbelievable. That's like one of the most imaginative movies I think I've ever seen in my life. It is crazy.
I've heard it's wild.
It's like
wild. I'm not even sure wild is in the right.
That's an understatement.
Realm, yeah. It's right. I mean, we love Midsommar. We love Hereditary. This is just
totally
like,
different. It's crazy.
It is. I bet you'll share this take too. It's one of those ones you walk out of a movie like that. If you truly love movies, love every type of movie, you go, that may never happen again. Like,
yeah.
Like wow. If you're thankful that you saw it, whether you loved it or hated it, like no matter what, and I'm sure that's exactly what he wants you to feel.
Yeah.
You're like, that movie doesn't ever get made. It got made. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's like a kaleidoscope in his brain. Like that's what the movie is. It's like insanity. Anything he thought of made its way onto the screen. And that's just, it's beautiful.
That's a really good way of putting it. Cause from the trailer gives me that impression. Yeah. It's a kind of psychological kaleidoscope.
It's crazy. All right. We didn't get a chance to do this with you last time. I think we did six pack of movies with you last time.
Okay.
Now we'll do a six pack of pure questions.
Okay.
The first of which being, what's a role that you auditioned for, really, really wanted, but didn't get?
oh my gosh, how long have you got? Can I do a 12 pack of those? Just a 12 pack of answers for that question. A role that I auditioned for that I didn't get. Oh man, I feel bad because I like there's scenarios where I like know the people who did get it, and then I don't want to sound like I, you know.
We always do this, and the answer is usually like sometimes the actor will defer and be like, "But they did it and it was amazing." That can always be the case, but you could still have
which
wanted
is
it.
Nearly always. Listen, they made the right decision when they didn't pick me. I'm not disputing that.
Like Pratt, for example, we talked to Jake Johnson, and like he was the last cut for Andy Dwyer in Parks and Recreation. And so no Pratt got way. That right ahead of him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I'm just cycling through. There are so many. I really wanted to do the internship. It was a chance to work with Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson. Mm-hmm. I'd auditioned. And I bombed my audition so hard. I flew out to LA in the screen test. I was three scenes in and I thought done. And I went, thanks so much. Thanks for seeing me. All the best. And they said, oh, the fourth scene. And I said, sorry. And they said, there's a fourth scene. Yeah. I did not realize Vince Vaughn like just turns to over his page. Side to the fourth scene. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. They gave me like 20 minutes to learn the fourth scene.
Oh no.
Like while I was outside. Meanwhile, the actor who gets the role goes comes right after. In and I have to listen to him crushing next door. Everyone erupting into laughter. I'm like nervously trying to learn the fourth scene in like 20 minutes. Max Minghella, he's yeah. amazing. Very such cool. a talented dude. He crushed it. I could never have done the job that he did in it. And so they made the right decision, but it was a humbling moment in my career for sure.
And then you had to go in after him and do the fourth scene.
And then I had to like crawl back in with my tail between my legs, give this terrible, you know, half baked version of scene four and totally underwhelm Vince Vaughn and everyone else in that room.
That's amazing. Who's a director that you're dying to work with? You've always worked with so many talented ones. Like it's crazy already, but what's one that you're like, I would love to have that experience?
I really want to work with Lynn Ramsey.
Oh wow. Yeah,
she's unbelievable. Unfortunately for me, she makes masterpieces and only very sparingly. Like she takes a number of years in between her films, and it's a reason because they're so brilliant. So her movies are kind of few and far between, but they're gold, and I think she's phenomenal. So she's definitely
you've
I've got a, kind again, of a long list,
a crazy mix, sorry, like you no. You've hit the duo, which is one of my favorite directing stories. Is you were directed by Wes Ball. You worked with Barry Jenkins and Underground Railroad. They were roommates at Florida State together. Yeah. That's a cool duo that you
were
got
they
to
roommates? I didn't even know yeah. that.
They went to film school together at Florida State. Yeah,
that's wild. I was very lucky to work with both of those guys in very different projects. Yeah, and you know, truthfully, Barry had been someone who was kind of on my bucket list of people to work with. So I'm very lucky that I got to do that.
He's crazy talented. And he's also part miss. Of it's, probably it's the best Hollywood power couple in the entire world. Him and his wife are insanely talented.
That's awesome.
What has been your weirdest fan interaction so far?
I was using the bathroom.
Always the bathroom. See? Every go. Single time we ask this, it's always the bathroom.
Using the bathroom. I was at a urinal.
Always.
And a gentleman asked me to list some of the things I'd been in.
And you can't do that.
I
you
said,
gotta know
yeah.
if you're gonna do the bathroom approach.
Yeah. And also I can't answer that without sounding like a real bleep. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can swear on
this stuff
without sounding like an asshole. Mm-hmm. So I didn't list any of the things I'd been in. I didn't want to like turn into Troy McClure and be mm-hmm. like, you might remember me from such thing. Like I didn't do that, at least of all in the bathroom. So I said, oh, I don't know, man, I'm an actor. I've done a few things. I'm sorry. I don't know what you've watched. And then he went, I know what it is. Toy Story.
No way. No.
And I was like, how do I explain that that character's animated, that it came out in 1996?
What a piece of shit.
That oh, my God.
But that was interesting. He was very
like 3 years old. Like-
yeah, but it was just – I think he was just a bit discombobulated. Yeah. And I was also urinating at the time, so I was a bit discombobulated by the question. And anyway, we ended up taking a photo once hands had been washed and – all of that kind of stuff.
Did you part with like, hey, by the way, you should probably rewatch that movie. Yeah, maybe a yeah. little closer.
Yeah. And also it wasn't motion capture. Just yes. clear. At no point was I involved in the making.
But you know, he posted that on like his MySpace or something. It was like, just met up with Sid from Toy Story.
Exactly.
Shit's crazy.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah.
Ask him the, you got to ask him the choose one for the last one here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. You got to choose one of these things. You either automatically win the Oscar for, let's say, best actor or whatever you want.
Okay.
Let's say. Or Erling Haaland instantly transferred to Arsenal right now. Right now. Wild Man is what, one point up?
Well, here's the thing. And I'm sorry to say, and that's no disrespect to the Academy, but Erling Haaland scores goals for fun. But here's the other thing, and this is why I'm being hesitant about this answer, is I feel such an intense sense of rivalry with Man City, which is a position I did not think Arsenal would be in. I didn't think I'd be in a position to feel a sense of genuine rivalry with Man City. But right now, like I'm praying that Leeds will beat Man City tomorrow. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm really sending out prayers, like hoping for miracles. That guy is so phenomenal. He's made single-handedly almost made Arsenal's chances of winning the league very, very slim now, unfortunately. We were riding high for a while and I was feeling really good about it. I have given you a non-answer. It just sucks to like, I can't, as much as I want him on my team, I don't dislike the guy. I'm not saying that. But I just feel such a bitter sense of rivalry now that I can't like
take one of your biggest rivals, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Take one of my biggest rivals. But like, who am I kidding? In the summer, if he made that crazy decision and we found the money to be able to pay his wages, I would love Erling
Haaland. We still got to get you on a stream with Troops, yeah. Troops and Zaha. We got to get you on.
I'd love to, because Troops is a big gunner,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. So, and then Zaha, who's probably right around the corner.
Is he Arsenal too?
He's massive Arsenal, mm-hmm. Yeah. I had Troops with a bat with a good line, I think, the other day. I came in the room while he was recording. Or right before he was recording, and I was like, yeah, you know, they call me Arsenal because I start on top, but I finish second. And he's just like, so
yeah, awesome. Troops is another world. He's the best. Last thing here before we wrap, we got absolutely just steamrolled by your previous interview. We had a 2-year-long payoff. We didn't taunt you, but after our interview wrap, we were like, hey, we know you're big milk bar pie guys. We're going to go get some. But they just got him for you. But we got you some as well.
Oh, you heroes. Oh, my gosh. Convenient to-go bag.
Yeah.
You absolute legend. Oh, I really appreciate that.
The payoff is not as good, but I'm glad we get you some.
It's three of you. The other guys, they ate like a hot – well, they tried on a whole pie, and they did so with some of the biggest knives I've ever seen in my life. I appreciate that safety precautions are being observed in this part of the building.
Zero. Oh, there's none over there.
Because they were eating it straight off the knife. I was really worried about some kind of accident unfolding. No, thank you so much for this. And shout out to Christina Tosi, the
Guardians actor killed with pie knife.
Yeah. Brutal way to go.
Chokes on milk bar pie. No, thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you, man. Do we really have to do a pitch for Guardians 3? Go see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Thank you so much. Please for talking. Hopefully it's not a 2-year wait again. It's been a blast.
Hopefully not. Hopefully we all get some great job opportunities since we've just done an interview.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
You're going to get a call like in an hour.
So hopefully good fortune.
Scorsese's going to be like, how about this Will Poulter guy? Tell me about it.
If he knows who I am, I'd be shocked. Shocked a bit. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Cheers.
All right. Big thanks to Will Poulter. Excited, hopefully, to have him back in at some point soon. Fun answers. I liked him admitting how many movie roles he did not get. He's like just straight up, like I just
everything. Goes, how much time so you got?
All right.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years, and this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate with the flavors your kids love. And the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. The final, I guess, Guardians movie ever made. Which I have some things to say about that.
It
stars mostly the same cast. No, there's a Yondu flashback in this, but for the most part, it's the Guardians we know and love. Peter Quill back, Gamora, Drax, Nebula, Groot, Mantis, Rocket. Adding new characters, Sean Gunn, James Gunn's brother, Kraglin, is back, but in a significantly more expanded role than he has been in past movies.
Cosmo,
yes, Maria Bakalova, the dog. Linda Cardellini plays her second Marvel character, by the way.
Yeah.
She plays Lila the Otter.
Oh.
And Judy Greer was one of the, I think, the pig, like the war pig thing.
Yeah.
A couple others, too.
Nathan Fillion plays just plays himself in a big suit.
That got a big Stallone. Laugh.
Yeah.
And then it's Chukwuma Okpogi, right? As I say his name.
Yes, I'm going to go with yes.
Oh, that's pronounced right. He plays a high evolutionary. We are
the worst authorities on that, though.
Yeah. A very cool, angry villain. And like we mentioned, Will Poulter back as Adam Warlock. Chris Pratt, two lead roles in two massive box office movies right now. Pretty crazy at the same time. Mm-hmm. Him and Zoe Saldana, just in general, own the box office.
Yeah.
Guardians 3, it's the final hurrah, set not long after Endgame. In Infinity War, I believe this, I saw a timeline thing today, this turns the page to 2026 in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Obviously, Endgame is set in 2025. I believe that's the way this takes place into 2026. That's just what I saw today. First one we loved. Ken Jack gave it 100 out of 100. I think the first one is a top five Marvel movie ever made. I think it's like one of the best comic movies ever made. I think it's the best, probably the best non Avengers. For you, it's your number one.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the first Guardians is the best non Avengers movie. And honestly, in terms of rating, I have it tied with Infinity War and Endgame, but I do prefer Infinity War and Endgame. The second one, I liked a fair amount. You liked it a little more than me. You gave it an 89, I gave it an 85. Gooch, I'll get your scores here in a second where you would have them retroactively at. I like this movie quite a bit. I liked it the least out of the three, though. I really enjoyed it. As a Marvel fan, I loved it. And it was a breath of fresh air with what we've had lately. And I've liked a bunch of the new Marvel movies. Like I didn't mind Ant-Man. I really enjoyed Doctor Strange, like the more we've like come from Doctor Strange. Thor, Love, and Thunder, the opposite. I've liked that probably less. I do like Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness. A fair amount. But this movie, I think, falls still short of what we've gotten from the best of the best in Marvel. I give it an 84 out of 100. It's the third out of these three. I think the idea that this needed to wrap up was a massive mistake. Like, I think we rushed too much. It's a lot. There's a lot of fucking movie here, and I think it's a little muddy at the end of the movie where it's just like, too much going on. You're just I won't spoil it right now. I'll get more into it in a second. Really enjoyed it. Really fun. But if I'm like pulling back and thinking about it, I give it an 84. We'll get into it. But I do think that it's we kind of square peg round hole the end of this franchise, where it just feels like a lot of it felt earned, a lot of the emotion. But some of it, I'm like, man, you could have used a little more story with these characters. Like, it just feels like their story being wrapped up just doesn't fully work for me. So 84 out of 100, Ken Jack.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you in that. I think it's not, like, for me anyway, I don't like it as much as one. I'd say I'm, like, on the same level as two, but for different reasons. And, again, it's very hard mark. It's, like, 89 out of 100 for me. And I think what's good about this is, like, the second one, there was a level of like a very much like earned emotion that led into the character with Ego. Like, I really, really like him and them two having a storyline. I like in this one how they kind of transitioned that and let everyone else kind of have more personality. Does that make sense? Like, we got a lot of, I think, really great stuff out of obviously Rocket. Like, his entire, he was basically the main emotional driving force of this entire movie. I think he was great. But also we got more like Drax, like him transit, like being like, oh, I'm actually, that's what I was born to be, dad, not a destroyer, and all that. Great moment for him. And also like Mantis and everyone else too. Like, all that was great. I'd like that they didn't end it with like Gamora being like, oh yeah, I'm going to be back with Peter Quill. I think that would have been a huge mistake as well. I do like how they kept separated. But at the same time, there's definitely cons. It felt like you're saying, muddied, rushed, a little jumpy. Especially, I think I agree with you to like in the very closing 10 minutes of the movie, definitely very rushy. But the first act specifically felt very jumpy, especially just like in the editing room, I guess. Like the scenes are just like talk, flip. And like that part felt a little off to me. Like they were trying to just not like get this over with, but like they could have done a better job of stitching shit together. I think the music was really good. Like they're always good. Like this would be the best music of any other sub Marvel franchise, but this is probably the weakest music of the three. But I do like the music.
Do you think the music didn't feel natural at times?
Not in the same way that it did with the first two Guardians. Like when the chain hits in Guardians 2,
right?
Fucking incredible. When he walks into Redbone in the very first one, sets the whole tone. Like all of that felt like it wove in better. I'd like to, again, like the choices. I just don't like. I don't think they were as strong as the other two. But at the same time, like I think the heart in this movie was awesome with Rocket getting his entire story fleshed out. Using animals is such a cheat code. It's like the biggest cheat code in the entire world. But fuck, man, it had me
sad.
I know, it had me tearing up. And I think that High Evolutionary on his own was one of the best villains Marvel's had, as far as from an acting performance and as also just from like you are one dimensionally hating this character. There's no, and like. We always sometimes would call that like a problem, like because we like Killmonger, we like Thanos, we like people who have motivations that we might be able to see in a more three-dimensional way. But I do like having him where it's just I one-dimensionally despise this human more than anything, and he's being acted to the fucking moon by. And I'm not even going to bother. You give it the pronunciation. I trust your pronunciation.
Chikwudu Awuji. Yeah. I think I what I really like about that character, and this is not much of a spoiler. Maybe it is. No, I don't think it is. He is very like the scale of his villainry is very like world-endy, big bad guy, but that's not his goal. Like I like that you can have this villain who has the size of a all-powerful, I can end the world, but that's not, he's like just trying to do his own thing somewhere else in the galaxy. Like I like that.
And I also liked how, and this is something that I think was very impressive, one of the most impressive things in the movie, because like where the stage we're at with Marvel right now, everything, you know, it just keeps expanding from like, hey, we have a guy stealing VCRs or whatever in early Marvel, to like now, like it's every villain needs to be someone that can destroy a galaxy or some shit. Like as big of the scale as this Guardians movie is, it still feels like a very intimate story. You know what I mean? Like we're just like very intimately focused on the within the Guardians thing. Like everything's like intro, but like it's not. Yeah, you have the big ass Borg cube that they need to blow up and all that shit. But the story itself feels way more intimate. The only other con I really had was like didn't really have as much like charm, I thought, as the first two movies. And that's just like I think a part of that being those two first movies were like very much like comedy focused. Like this one's definitely way more emotional, and that's like started right from the jump with the Rocket stuff. So it's tougher to kind of get infuse that humor. But when the humor did hit, it was really good. I feel bad though for Will Poulter and how they handled Warlock's situation.
Really?
Like, this is like, he's a character, right? That they teased at the end of the another Guardians movie. That's like when you get teased in a post credit, like you're going to be a big thing. Right. I think he introducing him, like we were talking about with him, like a, like he's not mature yet. He's still growing all these things. That's great. I think getting like two scenes and three lines and like him going from, yeah, I'm bad guy working for mom to now I'm now one of the good guys. I don't think he got enough shine. And I think if I could have had it in a way where he got his introduction in a different movie and we were able to just focus more and get more lines and more material out of the High Evolutionary, I would have preferred that. That said, I do think every time that he spoke as Adam Warlock, I was laughing. I'm like, this is cool. I just like, I wanted either more or none of him. If that makes sense. And then either more of the High Evolutionary or as much of the High Evolutionary as possible. But that would be my only other con.
See, for me, that's not who I would have cut. I would have, if I had to pick one character to cut out here, it would have been Sean Gunn.
Some Kraglin action?
Yeah, the Kraglin stuff, I just was not. Every time we cut to it and his, you know, journey to dealing with his loss of... Yondu.
There's only like two scenes though.
Yeah, just one of those things where I just didn't need it. I have, my score is a little, I think one point I'm at an 85, one point higher than you, a few points lower than you, but I think I'm the highest on this. I think this is Marvel's best since Infinity War. This is
Infinity War?
Yeah, but I'm lower on Endgame than you all. I like Endgame, but I have a lot of issues with it. It just has the secret sauce that Marvel has just been, missing. It's just like fun at the theater and you leave and you're not like, you don't have a bad taste in your mouth. There's not like, I wish that was better. This was exactly what I wanted. Went in. I don't know. Maybe my expectations have been lowered because of the last few years, but goddamn, did I have a good time. Just a great time at the theater. All three of these movies, I think the first one would be an 87 for me, and then Guardians 2 and Guardians 3 are right at 85. So as a franchise, as a standalone trilogy, this is the MCU's best.
Oh, yeah.
I think without debate. Maybe Captain America is right there, but I think you ask anybody Captain America.
Yeah. Captain America.
Won. Some people are lower on – I'm lower on Civil War.
I am too.
I'm higher on the first one.
First one's stinky.
No, I love the first one. It's got some great, just
the
like,
first one is like I would 2008 say I preferred, comic movie garbage. Not like it's not awful, but it's like so cheesy.
Yeah, but I love that cheese.
I preferred both Spider-Mans. I honestly preferred Shang-Chi over this, and I liked Wakanda Forever quite a bit. I do like this. I do like this more than Doctor Strange. I like it more than Thor: Love and Thunder. I like it more than Ant-Man. Spoiler time now. And I enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. The funny thing is I actually do think it's plagued by an issue that Marvel has been having for two or three years now. And I think it's when they have to wrap something up, they kind of struggle. I think only Loki's really done that well. Like, I think WandaVision had a tough end of their series. I think the series have had a hard time truly closing the book on something. And I don't know if it's partly because James Gunn has to go to DC now, but I just think there's too much going on. Again, spoiler. The end of the movie, you got the kids, you got Adam Warlock, you got Rocket storyline with the animal. Like, there's just so much going on that it just feels a little muddied, and you don't get, and it is a more intimate story, but you don't get that kind of intimate close. And I like Gamora's storyline, like, doesn't feel very satisfying to me. Like, I think that's a storyline that needs another movie. And again, I'm not sure, like, they seem to be done with this, and that's a problem that you can't, if that's the case, you have to wrap it up. But I think it plagues the movie a bit, where I think if you could have maybe shed some of that stuff, you're able to, like Drax being wanting to be a dad, Nebula and Mantis. Like, there's just so much. I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, this is a lot of stuff to wrap up at the end here. And I still liked it. Like, it's still earned. Like, I still really enjoyed it. I had a blast of the movie. But, man, I do think, like, the bummer for me is that, like, I think this had the bones to be better than the second one. But I don't think it is, because I don't think it's as fucking, like, focused. I think they're trying to do so much at the end.
Yeah, I will agree. At the end, like, do they need to wrap up everybody's storyline? I think that's where it's like, I don't need a wrap.
I mean, if Zoe Saldana says she's never playing Gamora again, I guess you have to.
Yeah.
But do you need to wrap it? Can't it just be she's gone. You know, this movie is over. Like, I don't know if you need to tell me what she's going to be doing. I don't need to know Mantis is going to find herself, or like the Peter Quill stuff. You have to wrap that, because it is more or less his trilogy.
Even though it's technically not wrapping him, I guess.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he's the one who's like, I'm back.
That's
yeah, sure, I'll do it. Yeah.
That's the one where I was like, he's going to hang out with his grandpa that we've never heard of before. I thought that was pretty
dumb. We see him in the first one for 10 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. He never heard of, like, never spoken about ever again.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree that it was a little bit too much there at the end. But outside that, like, just the pure fun of it all.
Absolutely.
And especially considering it's fun in something that's so dramatic. Like, and you can look at it in the same way with, like, Black Panther 2, where, like, the bones of that are so, like, it's like sad, right? Like, and you can say the same thing with Rocket. They're just trying desperately to save him. You're seeing his whole backstory, which is horrifyingly sad. We all like animals, and seeing animals getting tortured by this fucking maniac is just making you piss. But, like, the humor still cuts in. I think, like, probably 80% at the right time. Not like in the Thor: Love and Thunder where it's like, I have cancer, here's a joke. You know what I mean?
Well,
it's
that, like, That actually, like, remember how critical people were of the second Guardians of that? It's one of the bigger offenders of the MCU in terms of like serious joke. Where I feel like this one, it was a little more, it's almost like he kind of knew that and pulled it back a little bit.
I do like, by the way, great placement of Marvel's first fuck. That was
yes,
fantastic. Get in the fucking car.
I was like, I don't know, I'm not going to fun. But it didn't come when I expected it. And it was perfect. It was like, that's a good writing moment because it really did align. I mean, honestly, again, I'm only being like devil's advocate negative because like, I feel like
Chris isn't here.
Right. Yeah. It's just because I know like Gooch, I know you loved it. I do think there's some things where I'm like, I just wish it was. Like, again, the bones for this to be the best MCU thing since the Infinity Saga ended, I think it was right there. Like, I do think the Rocket emotional storyline is one of the best things ever done in the MCU. So, sorry, like, I should really probably set it up top. Like, there's my biggest thing that's, like, why I like this movie. It really pays off. Like, it is fucking emotional. You care about the character more than you ever have, even though you've always cared about Rocket. Like, if you like the MCU, you've loved Rocket since the beginning of Rocket. But, like, it works not just in Guardians. It works through his character in Infinity War and Endgame. He's always been kind of a – because you've always – funny enough, whether it was intentional or not, like, the most sympathetic you've ever seen Rocket was Infinity War and Endgame, right? Like, when he was, like, really trying to, again, bring the universe back. So, for him, like, It pays off in a great way that is worth it. Just like, man, again, there's just a lot going on at the end. Kraglin and Cosmo. It's just so much. Just so much stuff.
Cosmo's very funny. I did like their back and forth.
Very funny. Yeah. And like the fact that it was like, she's like, they sent me to Russia. It's like the Russians sent me into space. They thought I was going to die. Never called me a bad girl.
Playing poker or whatever, yeah.
Nathan Fillion's introduction scene where they talk about like the one friend in the crew. Very funny. That was very awesome. Good.
Yeah, I saw floated around on Twitter the possibility of a Wooji playing replacing Jonathan Majors. I mean, I know it's the same character or you can't have the same guy just like directly back to back. I would fucking love it. I would suspend every bit of disbelief I have to have him play.
He would have been great, but I don't know if you can now. Or
where has he been hiding? Where have they been keeping this guy? Because
he's so good.
He was great in Peacemaker.
Really good in Peacemaker.
But he was phenomenal here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, I mean, where would you, I'd have to go through and look at, you know, all the villains throughout the
MCU. He was in John Wick 2?
I mean, is this a top five MCU villain? I mean, he was great.
Yeah, I guess people are saying that you could say that the High Evolutionary is a Kang variant.
Yeah, exactly.
That would work pretty well.
I mean, they haven't even... MCU still hasn't commented on the Jonathan Majors stuff at all, so who knows if they're even going to recast him at this point.
Yeah.
No, apparently they have made a call. They just haven't said it yet.
Oh, okay.
They haven't said shit.
Okay. I mean, they filmed all of Loki season 2, which he would be heavily in.
That's the biggest issue, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should ask Walter about that, even though he wouldn't be able to say a word about it.
And back to like the joke stuff, I can forgive, you know, undercutting scenes with jokes. If they're fucking funny.
Yeah.
And James Gunn is funny. Like, his writing is funny. Like, it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do feel like this is a bit of a bittersweet moment for Marvel, where this is going to, what's the audience score? I know it's upper 90s right now. The cinema score is high. The audience score is high. This has got to be one of their highest of the phase, if not the highest.
95, yeah.
So this becomes a bit of a bittersweet moment for Marvel, where they get their hit that they've really wanted with audiences. But now James Gunn is leaving to run their rival studio.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a bummer. I mean, it also feels like he was testing what he could get away with in a comic book movie here. Mm-hmm. He's pushing the boundaries of how dark can I actually go? How much do audiences have a stomach for?
Yeah.
I mean, there was some very, like, I would not take anybody below the age of, what, 10 to see this movie?
That dude does get ripped in half. There's a lot of violence. There's some good violence in it, too. That hallway fight I thought was awesome.
Yeah,
the hallway fight was fun. Stitched together one take, it was sick.
There's some dark shit in here.
Yeah. This poor animal.
Yeah, shooting the animal, even though the animal is, like, anthropomorphic and robotic, it's like, you're like, oh, fuck, dude.
That bunny's having a panic attack, like, behind them. Like, that, it was... Rocket ripping his face off?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, see that, face I didn't, the when end. They ripped the face off, I thought that was going to be it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we're not going to see it. Also, the Carrot guy got a huge laugh out of it.
Carrot guy was so funny, dude.
Carrot guy was very funny.
That guy looks like a carrot.
Every practical design on those like characters and on the Counter-Earth was fucking hilarious.
Really good.
Like those I love that they use those practical designs, like make them look like puppets basically.
And the what do you call it? The pictures, like the family portraits they had on the wall, like doing like the old 90s style also. Dude, very
when he asked for the car and the dad just threw his hands up in the air, he's whatever. Like, God damn it.
That's another one too. This I love moments like this where like he goes to drive the car and I was thinking in my head, like, how's he gonna know how to drive? And then he's like, I haven't been on Earth since I was 8. I was like, I like it. I like that. You thought what I was thinking before while I was thinking it, or you said it out loud. But I love that part. That everything in Counter Earth, dude. Really cool.
So, I mean, so many characters were at their best here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rocket, of course, but I think this was easily Nebula's best. And there was a very real possibility where Gamora, with another writer, I think this is a storyline that not many writers could have handled. You got to know her and really know what you're trying to do. I think James Gunn executed that well. Like so many other people would have fallen into the trap of just having them get back together. Mm-hmm. And I love that they didn't do that. Like this is a different person.
Yeah.
It just is. And I love that Peter had to reconcile with that.
Yeah. I did like when he's like, my girlfriend got thrown off a magic cliff and everyone else got brought back. Not her though. Don't know why.
She's a dick.
Yeah. This new one's a dick. That was funny.
Yeah, no, I think in the end they did a nice job wrapping it up. I think I have my complaints for sure. It's not an easy task to wrap that up as quick as they did. And again, he said he wanted to do a trilogy, but like the door is just closed because of DC now, I guess. So it's just tough.
Wait, what do you mean he wanted to do a?
He said he always said like I wanted to make a trilogy. Like it seemed like the trilogy was always his idea, right? Like he wanted to do three.
Mm-hmm. Wait.
So, like, I guess this wraps in the way that he wanted to.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's different where if we're leaving this and he's still part of Marvel and not going to the rival, the door could be open to finish more, and maybe you could leave some storylines maybe more open as opposed to closed. But he kind of closed every one, so.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about those post-credits where they did somewhat leave the door open for more Guardians movies, which –
Well, the Guardians are going to be in the MCU. Like, I think they have to be.
It's just a newer group.
It's a newer group that will show up, I'm assuming, in crossovers, in Avengers 5 and 6. Like, I get to see that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just worry about someone else trying to come in and emulate what James Gunn has done. Like, I don't know, especially without the main players.
Yeah, I mean that has to be the end of the Guardians movies. Like I wouldn't hate them seeing them in the other team up ones, but I don't want to see them, I think, in another with this crew done by a different director.
I'm not as much of a comic guy, but I know you know Rob, like the Guardians exist in many variations and ways throughout the comics. So it's
they don't really exist is the funny part. Like,
yeah, I know Rocket, I had a friend who worked at Marvel when this movie came out. When I worked with him at MLB. He worked at Marvel before that. And he was like, honestly, I was not excited for this movie at all. Like, it's one of my least favorite comics. Like, I don't love the Guardians. Like, they're not likable. And he was surprised. And he's like, and then I saw the movie. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, they did an amazing job with the movie.
Rocket Raccoon was in 10 issues before Guardians came out. Not 10 issues of Guardians. 10 issues across every Marvel comic. Like, he would just appear on the side, had some fans, but like he really wasn't a character anyone knew.
Yeah,
but point being, like there are variations of this team. Like, it's not
I would love to see Adam Warlock get his own movie versus trying to do Guardians 4. Like,
and maybe that's what they'll do,
Even just like a few lines in the next team up movie. Like, I feel like that's what I'm saying is, like, I feel like he deserved more than that, considering the tease, considering just like the not like Will Poulter's like the fucking Tom Cruise of the universe or something right now, but I feel like he deserved more airtime.
Yeah,
you also have Nova too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Nova.
So Nova, it could be a thing where they show up in Nova. That would make complete sense. There's just a ton of random characters that Captain Marvel, Doctor Doom.
Yeah. Doctor Doom.
Iron Man was in it at one point. Old Marvel boy.
Fuck. I think I saw the actor that played Doctor Doom in a show recently.
The Thing, like, Venom, Adam Doom. Warlock. So.
Mm-hmm.
So where? Yep. Where this is the final film of Phase 4, right? Or phase? What phase are we on?
Let's see.
I can't remember. There's so many of these movies.
Let's see. Oh,
phases. Whenever I go to that fandom website, my fucking computer slows down. It's been the case forever. It's the strangest thing. The phase that we're in right now, phase 4 ends with. No. This was phase 5.
Oh, so this is the first of phase 5?
No, it's the second. Quantumania was the first of phase 5. Wakanda Forever ended phase 4. Then the Marvels, Captain America, New World Order, Thunderbolts, and Blade.
Okay, so you would have this third, though, post-Endgame.
Post-Endgame, I liked Wakanda Forever more, and I liked Shang-Chi. No, fourth, and I liked Spider-Man No Way Home more.
Eternals.
You're still that high on No Way Home?
I was the lowest on No. I was lower on No Way Home than anyone else. People thought that was the fucking best Marvel movie of all time.
There's still people.
No Way Home. I definitely had that very low.
There's still people who think that's the that movie. Oh,
it's written by Reddit.
It cannot be said that I had it low. I had it lower than I think all three of us.
I know I was shitting on it.
That was definitely
you had
high.
An 89. I
was a point above you.
I think I was high.
I know for a fact I had it lowest in the podcast because I got a lot of shit for it. And I still like it. I like the movie more than I like this one.
I just remember when we reviewed it, I was shitting on it for being like, this is so fan servicey and so this. But yeah,
it was fan servicey the movie. Yeah. No, you gave it 89, I gave it an 88. That's a movie with a lot of shit in it that I think lands better than this one does.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one handled a lot of shit better than this one handled a lot of shit. I think it was just too much at the end.
Mm-hmm. Aunt May's death was really good. That's a great scene for Marvel.
So we'll see what the rest of them. Also, Blade apparently cut out Kit Harington. Did you see that?
Really?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mia Goth. That's the news we didn't mention. Mia Goth is apparently playing the villain in Blade, which sounds awesome.
Oh, see that video I posted of her the other day?
It's so weird. Yeah.
We're talking about J-Lo.
So
we got some new first looks at the next Pearl movie, the next X movie, Maxine. Yeah,
Halsey looks so good. Mm. She's so hot. Ashley.
Anagram. It's an anagram, right? That's what it's called?
Yeah, I don't know. He makes the letters up like Tom.
Yeah,
Riddle.
It's an anagram. Yeah. All right, that's it. I think next week, we have a 1 week off because of, like, we're going to have a podcast, but I think we have a week off of like big movie releases because of Fast coming out.
There's one movie coming out next week. What's it called?
Next week?
Yeah, it's with Tom Holland.
The Next Chapter?
Tom Holland? Rats, I forgot the name.
I think the Russo brothers are directing it.
Oh, Cherry, you're right.
Yeah.
We did say we were going to do Hypnotic with Ben Affleck, too.
Oh, actually, yeah, no, that'll be a very fun one to review, I think.
Hypnotic.
It looks so absurd.
We could do Sisu at some point, but that's still not wide. Sisu is so good. It's fucking awesome time.
Yeah, Sisu's kind of hard to find here.
Yeah.
I may be on end of week next week. Mm. I may be on the second half because I don't think I'm going to be able to be on because I'm traveling. We got to prep for
Fool's Paradise with Ken Jeong. Why is Ken Jeong? Oh, Charlie Day should be the Charlie Day.
Not that we need to hash out our schedule here, but we'll do Fast 10 the week after. We'll record on that Sunday too.
Knights of the Zodiac.
Yeah, the old trivia tournament in the office on that following Monday. So we'll do Fast 10 on. We'll release it the week after. We'll do all that. And robots, maybe.
Yes, let's do robots. It's going to be the comedy of the summer.
Robots. Oh, stop. You're number such two a, you're comedy such like of a the neon. Summer. You, like your fucking roommate work for Neon or something?
No, my roommate's a Criterion head. He doesn't really care about Neon. He doesn't watch new movies. It's the fucking worst.
There is a new movie. There's a movie that just got a Criterion release that I kind of chuckled at. What was it?
Yes. I saw one in the email and I was like, why did this get a Criterion release?
Hot Rod.
No, it was fucking, it's in my email.
There is a new Barry Jenkins' first movie, Medicine of Melancholy, is getting a Criterion release. It was pretty fucking awesome. But There was a what the fuck was it?
Hold on. I saw it and I was like, why is it? Was it Thelma and Louise that got a Criterion?
Was that, I think sense. That's what, yes, Thelma and Louise got it. I was like, oh.
That makes sense.
That's not a Criterion
movie. It does, but I was surprised.
Movie.
I was
like, that's not a Criterion movie.
I was like, oh, fuck, okay. There's just some that you see sometimes that you just don't expect. Some other ones that are coming out.
There's some where it's just like cinema heads are horny for the people. You know what I mean? Like anything, like Lynch, anything, he could fucking take a shit on a DVD and they'd be like, here's our new Criterion release. Like there's certain people they just love, get the regardless of the actual quality.
The Three Colors box set I gotta get. All right. Well, that's it. For Ken Jack and Gooch, Jeff Tilo, we'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
Hard and hydrate hard with Body Armor Flash IV. Whether you're working in extreme heat or powering through a long shift, Body Armor Flash IV delivers faster, longer-lasting hydration. With more than 2,000 milligrams of electrolytes, vitamins B and C, and zinc, coconut water, and no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes, Body Armor Flash IV keeps you performing at your best. Get Body Armor Flash IV at your local 7-Eleven.
Lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Whoop. Sleep better, train smarter, recover faster, and feel healthier. Understand and optimize your sleep. Get coaching and insights for every age, stage, and cycle. Track over 140 habits. Get a 360 view of your training and workouts. Never miss a second of data with a wireless and waterproof charger. Expect all new features all the time.
The all-new Whoop is here. Now more advanced than ever. Train smarter, sleep deeper. Recover faster. Extend your healthy years. Understand your cycle phases. Now 7% smaller with 14 plus days of battery life. So your data never stops, and neither do you. Power your best performance with memberships made for every goal. Join Whoop today.